From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, January 21st, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
The Trump administration's executive order to end birthright citizenship is facing lawsuits in Maine from both the state attorney general's office and immigrants' rights groups. Trump's order published yesterday says the federal government will no longer issue citizenship documents to children of non-citizens. Multiple federal lawsuits were filed today, including one by Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry and 17 other states, and another by the American Civil Liberties Union affiliates in Maine and other immigrants' rights advocates. Both accuse the Trump administration of disregarding the 14th Amendment and U.S. Supreme Court precedent. Cody Wofsy with the ACLU says the order is blatantly unconstitutional, and he expects the courts to place an injunction to stop the order from going into effect.
The bottom line here is that this is completely new and unprecedented. There's never been an attempt like this to take away the citizenship of people born in the United States since the 14th Amendment.
Wofsy says children of non-citizens would live under threat of deportation and could potentially be stateless. Trump's executive order would take effect 30 days after its publication. Hours into his new term, and President Donald Trump hit the pause button on American wind power development, fulfilling a commitment he made after railing against wind energy on the campaign trail. As Peter McGuire reports, the order may hobble Maine's plan to meet ambitious clean electricity targets.
Trump's executive order puts a stop to federal leases for ocean wind power, and it suspends permitting and funding for offshore and land-based turbines until federal agencies review the environmental and economic impacts of wind projects. The order could hinder development of Maine's demonstration floating wind farm on a federal Gulf of Maine lease, and a suspension of federal permitting could impact a planned wind power project in northern Maine. And it might affect Maine's long-term energy plans. A goal of using 100% clean electricity by 2040 leans on building 3 gigawatts of offshore wind, according to a state energy plan out this month. Jack Shapiro with the Natural Resources Council of Maine says the far-reaching effects of the order aren't clear yet. But he's perplexed by the new administration's opposition to an industry with the potential to lower energy prices, grow the state's economy, and reduce reliance on electricity made from fossil fuels.
You know, right now we send billions of dollars out of state to pay for fuels. What if that money was being reinvested in the state for energy that was being made right here at home?
But Jacob Posick with the Maine Policy Institute, a right-leaning think tank, says pumping the brakes on new offshore wind is a good idea. Ocean wind is so expensive to build that it ends up raising prices, according to Posick. Instead, he thinks the state should be focused on developing all forms of energy, including renewables, that could reduce costs and improve reliability.
I think the problem is when you're distorting the market to prop these certain forms of energy up, when they wouldn't otherwise be able to compete.
Kyle Murray, with the clean energy and climate nonprofit Acadia Center, says Trump's order will allow permitted wind projects in Massachusetts and elsewhere to move ahead. But if the administration maintains its anti-wind stance, it will likely challenge Maine's plans. And while Murray still believes wind power is viable, interrupting development may require that New England states redouble efforts in other areas to expand clean energy and lower greenhouse gas pollution, he says.
We also need to focus on solar, energy efficiency, those types of things that can really help us meet our climate goals as well.
The Maine Governor's Energy Office says it is reviewing Trump's executive orders, but it will be years before the planned floating research array is ready to apply for federal permits. In a statement, Director Dan Burgess says, quote, offshore wind remains important to addressing Maine's energy challenges, and the state remains committed to advancing responsible offshore wind, particularly through the research array. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
15 people connected to Maine are expected to receive clemency for their roles in the assault on the U.S. Capitol 4 years ago, after President Trump signed sweeping pardons on his first day in office. Steve Missler has more.
11 of the 15 people have already been convicted. They include Christopher Maurer, who was sentenced to a federal prison for assaulting police officers with a dangerous weapon, and Kyle Fitzsimmons, a Lebanon man who federal prosecutors described as one of the most violent and aggressive of the January 6 rioters. Fitzsimmons was convicted and sentenced in 2022 on 11 charges, including assaulting three different police officers during the rioters' attempts to stop the certification of the 2020 presidential election. A federal inmate tracker showed that Fitzsimmons was still in a Florida prison as of Tuesday afternoon. Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree decried the president's clemency for 1,500 rioters, including those convicted of seditious conspiracy.
They were harming police officers. They were going against the peaceful transfer of power. And now we're just going to say, oh, great, by the stroke of a pen, a president can dismiss the law in this country. I think that's deeply unsettling.
Independent U.S. Senator Angus King was also disturbed, saying it was impossible to square President Trump's inaugural speech highlighting law and order with blanket pardons for those who carried out the January 6th attack on his behalf. Republican Senator Susan Collins voted to impeach Trump for his role in the riots and co-authored an opinion column calling its leaders terrorists. In a statement, Collins said some of those charged may deserve clemency, but not those engaging in violence. She also sought to draw an equivalency with President Joe Biden's recent pardons. Democratic Congressman Jared Golden, who once called January 6th the dark day in our nation's history, had not commented as of Tuesday afternoon. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Governor Janet Mills says she's still reviewing how the slew of executive actions from President Trump will affect Maine. Mills was more reserved than some of her Democratic colleagues after Trump quickly began following through on his campaign promises on immigration, energy, and pardons for the January 6 rioters. She did take one subtle jab at Trump.
I'm waiting for the president's plan to bring down the cost of eggs and bread, heat and housing, and prescription drugs. We have yet to see that plan.
Trump also reiterated his plan to impose a 25% tariff on imports from Canada, which is Maine's largest trading partner. Maine Senator Angus King has voted against confirming President Trump's nominee for defense secretary. As Kevin Miller reports, King says veteran and former Fox News host Pete Hegseth failed to answer critical questions.
King is an independent, but he joined the 12 Democrats on the Senate Armed Services Committee in voting against Hegseth. In a statement, King didn't address some of the more salacious arguments against the nominee, including allegations of sexual assault and heavy drinking. Instead, he accused Hegseth's team of slow-walking the committee review. He said Hegseth failed to endorse international laws against torture or to clearly support Ukraine in its war against Russia. King also called Hegseth's professional career, quote, spotty, and questioned whether he had the experience needed to run the Pentagon. All 14 Republicans on the committee endorsed Hegseth. The nominee can only afford to lose 3 Republican votes in the full Senate if Democrats unite against him, which means attention will now likely shift to Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins and other swing votes. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Among the dozens of executive actions that President Donald Trump took on his first day in the White House was a hiring freeze on the federal workforce. Jobs at federal civilian agencies that were vacant as of yesterday at noon cannot be filled, and agencies are prohibited from creating new positions. In questioning the president's pick to lead the Department of Veterans Affairs today, U.S. Senator Angus King says he, quote, can't complain about a hiring freeze because he imposed one when he took office as Maine's governor. But he says there ought to be exceptions.
The hiring freeze should not apply to direct care workers. If my Togus Hospital in Maine needs a cardiologist and it's been open for a couple of months because they're hard to find, this hiring freeze should not prohibit them from continuing to search for, and if they can find a cardiologist, to sign them up.
In response, Trump's VA nominee, Doug Collins, says he'll make sure that veterans have access to the care they need. Military personnel and those involved in immigration enforcement, national security, and public safety are exempt from the freeze. An Aroostook County nursing home that's been operating for 50 years will close by the end of April. Northern Maine General sent a letter notifying residents, families, and staff of Mercy Home in Eagle Lake last week. The organization says it's had to rely on costly contract labor to fill staffing shortages in recent years and has also had to limit capacity to 30 residents instead of 40. Eagle Lake Town Manager John Sutherland says the closure will have an economic impact because Mercy Home is the community's largest employer.
It's also going to be an issue that, you know, people that lived in our community most of their lives, that wanted to spend their final years in our community, you know, they'd be able to reside at Northern Maine General, and, you know, their family that are local would be able to stop by and see them.
Sutherland says Eagle Lake is willing to work with Northern Maine General if there's any possibility of keeping the nursing home open. The president of Northern Maine General could not be reached for comment on Tuesday. Nordic Aqua Farms announced last week that it will no longer pursue its land-based salmon farm in Belfast after years of legal challenges from opponents. The company says it has spent tens of millions of dollars on the project and secured local, state, and federal permits, but the project faced legal setbacks when trying to secure access to Penobscot Bay to draw water and discharge wastewater. Belfast Mayor Eric Sanders says he is disappointed but not surprised by the announcement.
And obviously, the tax money would have been hugely beneficial to the city of Belfast's residents, and that would have been ongoing year after year. So that's a loss.
In a Facebook post, Upstream Watch, which has long opposed the project, says it's a huge win for the city and that the project was ill-conceived and would have polluted Penobscot Bay. If it seems like Maine winters aren't as white as they used to be, well, you're right. There is less snowfall in southern Maine, and when it does snow, more frequent melt events mean it doesn't stick around for long. And Nordic skiing, a sport that relies on natural snow, is feeling the effects. Molly Ann King has more.
For decades, Smiling Hill Farm has offered cross-country skiing on its sprawling network of trails. But this winter, that all changed.
Thank you for calling Smiling Hill Farm. Please listen carefully as our menu has changed. For cross-country skiing information, please press 3.
3 is an invalid entry.
For Michael Knight and his family, the decision to shut down cross-country ski operation was a wrenching but practical one. The farm has been in Knight's family for over 300 years. He used to groom the trails with his father when he was young.
We get up at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night and groom all night long, and it was good to be out in nature and in the evening. And, you know, I always looked across the snow on a cold night, and it just sparkles when the light hits it. I always called it diamonds in the snow.
But Knight says it's just not viable anymore. Last winter, the farm saw just one good day of skiing. And with the cost of grooming, hiring employees, and maintaining rental equipment, Nordic skiing hasn't brought in a profit for the farm in over 5 years.
Hey, we're in the middle of January, and you need a good 5 or 6 weeks of revenue coming into this place in order to make that pay for itself, and I'm smart enough to realize it ain't working.
Ski trails all across southern Maine have been bare this winter due to lack of snow. Even this past weekend's storm wasn't enough for the trails at Pineland Farms to open for skiing. Nordic coach Nathan Alsobrook at Bowdoin College in Brunswick says, in recent years, he's been trying something different to pick up the monotony of dryland training for his team members during those long, snowless months. Skiing on grass or sand.
You just end up taking a really old, junky pair of skis, maybe something you outgrew from back when you were 14 or 15 years old, and take those out and find a beach or a dune that has sand that's not too coarse, and the ski will actually slide on it.
Maine's winters have warmed 5 degrees Fahrenheit and shortened by 3 weeks in the past century due to human-caused climate change. The last 2 winters here were the warmest on record. Dartmouth researcher Alex Gottlieb says future winters in southern Maine will not only have less snow, but also more melt events. And the warmer it gets, the faster this process accelerates.
You might expect if you warm a degree that your snow season will shorten by, say, a week. But that next degree, you know, might not shorten it by another week, but by, say, 10, 11, 12 days. So each additional bit of warming is going to take a larger and larger chunk.
Gottlieb says mild coastal regions of Maine can expect to lose 10 to 12 days of snow cover per degree Celsius of warming. Snowpack is vital to cross-country skiing, which needs at least 4 to 5 inches of snow to maintain a decently groomed trail. Yarmouth High School's cross-country ski team would normally train at Pineland Farms, 15 minutes away. But this year, they chose to travel 3 hours north to Millinocket for their ski camp over holiday break to train on natural snow. It was that, team captains Graham Baybute and Xander Gordon tell me, or have a repeat of last year, skiing for the first time in a competition setting.
We haven't gotten on snow at all. Like, that's our only chance to get on snow and actually ski. So
there's nothing worse than showing up to the first race never having skied before.
Yeah.
If you're a new person coming to the team.
But one cross-country ski course in Waterville has found a way forward. Quarry Road is the only Nordic ski area in central and southern Maine that has invested in snowmaking specifically for Nordic skiing. On a recent afternoon, it was packed with close to 200 people on skis, ranging from tiny children to college athletes to amateur adults. Skiers from Waynefleet High School were there to practice before a big race.
Yeah. So it's like hour and a half drive.
It's the only place with snow, really.
Yeah. We come up here and we're always shocked at, you know, how much snow they have, how groomed it is. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Jeff Tucker is the director of skiing at Quarry Road and coach of the Waterville High School ski team.
3:50 at the top of Sprint Hill, so 20 minutes of easy skiing. Don't be late.
He thinks snowmaking is the future of Nordic skiing.
Yeah, I do feel like locally, like, definitely keeping the sport alive, and like, you know, you'd love to see other venues figure something out that works for them.
But Tucker acknowledges it's a costly, labor-intensive process. 24 volunteers, alongside the Parks and Rec staff, make consistent snowmaking at Quarry Road possible. Despite the changing climate, also Brooke says he believes the future of cross-country racing is likely safe for now, between travel for snow and snowmaking. But as the natural snow disappears, he fears the sport could become less accessible to casual Nordic skiers, who are a big part of the sport's culture.
It's just going to be that much harder for people to get into the sport. And honestly, why would you? If you've never tried this sport before, how are you going to get excited about it when it takes so much investment of time and money to get the equipment and get to the right places that have those little pockets of snow? That's never going to replicate the exploration element, the wilderness, you know, getting out and stretching your legs and skiing for kilometer after kilometer.
And in southern Maine, the days you can wake up, strap on some skis, and head out to a local field or trail or golf course are now few and far between. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, the first show in a new series, Living with a Disability in Maine. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.